From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hi, everybody. Ryan Finley here. The following podcast deals with our ongoing series, Tidal Wave. To read every story in the series, visit Tucson.com. If you're interested in following further Title IX issues, follow the Star's Caitlin Schmidt on Twitter. She is at Caitlin C. Schmidt. You can email her at cschmidt@tucson.com. On with the show. Welcome to the Tidal Wave podcast. This is episode 2. I'm Arizona Daily Star sports editor Ryan Finley, here with Caitlin Schmidt. Caitlin, thank you for joining us.
Of course.
You went to Baylor, and first of all, if you have not read Caitlin's project, Tidal Wave, do so right now. Pause. We'll wait for you. Go to Tucson.com and read all about it. To me, Caitlin, the most interesting part of your project is the thing we're going to talk about today, which was your trip to Baylor and to Waco, Texas. Baylor, for those who don't know, was basically the laughingstock of college athletics for, what, 5 years? 4 years? Based on a series of sexual assault cases, accusations of sexual assault, that cost Baylor's football coach, Baylor's athletic director, Baylor's university president all their jobs. They have since basically started from scratch and completely revamped their Title IX program. Take me through what they've done.
I mean, what haven't they done is possibly the better question, but I want to point out that Baylor was the only school in this project that agreed to an in-person visit. Mm-hmm. They're also a private university, so there was no expectation of that, but they were very welcoming. I got to sit down and meet with Athletic Director Mac Rhodes, Deputy mm-hmm. Athletic Director Don Rogers, and Laura Johnson, who is their Director of Title IX. Mm-hmm. The President, Linda Livingstone, wasn't there, but I talked to her on the phone later. But Baylor, a sweeping change, I think, is the appropriate phrase for what Baylor's done. You know, when this all came to light, they brought in an outside investigator to review how they had handled Title IX, and they found a number of errors. This law firm actually implemented 105 recommendations for Baylor to improve its program campus-wide, not just in athletics, although athletics certainly made the headlines, these investigations ran much deeper on the entire student body. It just seemed that there really wasn't an environment where students were comfortable reporting these kinds of issues. So they implemented these 105 recommendations pretty quickly. The athletic department was actually the first to complete their set. But I think it started with a $4.3 million investment into the Title IX office, staffing, creating a new physical space that kind of reminded me of a living room almost. They had a coffee bar set up when you walked in, front desk lobby area, but they have rooms that are set up with couches and chairs so that when you're talking about what's probably the worst moment in your life, they have set you up to feel as at ease as you probably could in those circumstances. They also completely redid their Title IX policy. We're now looking at a 39-page Title IX policy. It's the most robust that I've seen in examining these across several schools. Redid the website. They created a centralized reporting system and an anonymous reporting tool that they had previously not had. I mean, there were all sorts of deficiencies before. There wasn't annual training happening for staff or students, so now that's going on. Mandatory training for all first-year students, and they also do individual training for teams, specific teams broken into groups. More counseling staff, specific policies to the athletic department. I think one of the big things that they did was they developed an amnesty policy. Baylor is a dry campus, so students who reported sexual misconduct, if they were intoxicated at the time, could actually face discipline, and that's no longer the case. If you make a good faith report, you will not be disciplined for breaking that honor code violation. They also beefed up their athletic transfer policies. That had seemed to be kind of a big problem, that they weren't vetting recruits properly. And now seems to be pretty rock solid, but they also increased police officers training for police officers. I mean, it's a long list. There's a bystander intervention program. Every restroom in campus, every single individual stall has a poster detailing Title IX resources. It's in their culture, every part of it.
Right. And this is a culture that basically they've created from scratch within the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. Take me through sort of who the big characters are over at Baylor.
So we have Mac Rhodes, who is heading up the athletic department. After he was brought on.
Tucson guy.
Uh-huh. After he came in, he actually created Dawn Rogers' position. And while they all work with Title IX, she is probably the most closely affiliated with Title IX.
And she was at ASU.
Okay. So we got a lot of Arizona roots over at Baylor.
Right.
Laura Johnson, the Title IX director, is the newest hire. She came on in the fall of 2018. This woman wrote her dissertation on Title IX, so she is probably the most passionate person I've ever seen talk about this field. Mm-hmm. And then you also have new president Linda Livingstone, female president, former college athlete, very cognizant that this will always be a part of their history, and it's not anything anybody on that campus will ever forget, but they also aren't going to let it happen again.
Right. And that's one of the interesting things that Mac Rhodes said. I'm sure that we're going to get to this audio, is, you know, basically, what good is all they've gone through if they can't share what they've learned with others? Correct.
Right. And that's what they had. That's what they'd said when I asked them if I could come visit, which was surprising, but wonderful. I mean, what was the point of all of this having happened if they aren't willing to teach other schools? And they were really upfront with me that, you know, the athletic training that they do, they borrowed from the Air Force Academy. I mean, this is in the academic space, schools are willing to share with each other. And what better way to improve upon what you're doing than to borrow from someone else that's doing it well? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, Title IX and the athletic department are basically equal partners in all of the training.
Okay.
The Title IX office implements all of the training sessions. Dawn actually talked to me a little bit about that when I visited.
As we moved into year two of our programming, Title IX has been a part of every step. They actually come in. They have a person that coordinates all their education. And so for our staff training that we do every year, Elizabeth came in and she did the training, and we had the Cleary office come as well, and then, you know, the three of us kind of tag team, but they're doing the content of what we're doing, or our educational component for our student athletes this year. They were a part of developing the curriculum, the training, and then they sat through every session with us. We kind of jokingly would refer to them sometime as phone a friend. You know, there was just carte blanche in the room of if somebody wanted to interject something, or especially on some subject matter where we're not the experts, to be able to defer, you know, to Title IX in the room. And so they are, you know, they're a true partner with us. It's not our expertise. We're looking to them to be the experts in the room, and to make sure that we follow the right process.
And one of the other things that we had talked about was how, you know, even though Baylor is proud of what's going on, they've had success, this is always going to be a work in progress. And part of that is constantly evaluating that progress. And there are different ways that they do that, which Mac talked about.
This is always, for us, a work in progress, you know, an evaluation, what's working well, what can we tweak. You know, what do we need to change, right? What's impactful, what's maybe not so impactful, right? Because at the end of the day, if we're going to do this, let's not waste anybody's time. Let's do it and make sure that it's impactful and that it's changing lives, right? That it's really, we're really teaching young people about how to respect one another, how to have healthy relationships, you know, how to handle difficult circumstances, all those different things, right? And so it's got to go, Caitlin, way beyond just 5 hours of training, right? If that's all we do and it's a check the box, right, then we're not doing our job, right? And so how do we make this live throughout the year, throughout the process? And, you know, our coaches are a big part of that, right? Our coaches have to own this, right? We always talk about, you know, it's not going to be important to our student athletes unless it's important to our coaches. They spend most of the time, you know, with our student athletes. And so they've got to support this. They've got to be engaged. You know, Matt Rhule, you know, speaking on his own to the football team throughout the year about, you know, healthy relationships and how you treat people, et cetera. Those are things that are all part of this.
To me, Caitlin, that's one of the more interesting things here is their acknowledgement that this is kind of a living and breathing thing, right? And that just because you have a good policy, and they have maybe the best policy money can buy, right? They put how much?
Well, 4.3 million overall.
But I mean, they've hired at least the best people, or highly trained, and I'm assuming very highly paid people, right, to implement this. It's expensive, but you know, it's a sign also of their commitment to it, would be my guess. I mean, you don't throw a bunch of money at something unless you are serious about it. And you know, despite all the money and all the personnel that they've put in there, they review this thing constantly, right? It's every year. Their training programs vary from year to year. That way, no student athlete sees the same thing twice. Or no student athlete, if you're doing it just for freshmen, right?
Right.
Last year's freshmen, you know, have no idea what this year's freshmen are seeing. So you can't be like, oh, don't go to that, it's boring. Or here, I'll give you the short version so you don't have to go. It changes year to year, correct?
Right. Yes, they're definitely, it's a moving, changing thing. They're handing out surveys after all of these, finding out what works, what doesn't work. You know, and of course Baylor has to do this. Every school has to do this. But they're real cognizant that they're not doing this just because of what happened. It's a built-in commitment of everybody involved with the school, which Mac actually spoke about.
It is a societal issue, and that's of great concern to all of us sitting in this room, right? Especially, a father of three daughters, right? But yet, my greatest concern is just our student athletes, and it's about, hey, we've got a responsibility to teach them, right? All of us do, right? And this is part of it, right? This isn't the only thing we do, right? We're having social responsibility, you know, conversations about race and substance abuse and, you know, all of those different things, right? This is certainly, you know, prevalent and really, really important, but it can't be, hey, because this happened at Baylor, you know, now we have to do this. Because if that's our attitude, we have to do this, then I'm not sure how much we grow and we learn.
And I think back to the Title IX policy, Laura Johnson, when I met with her, was telling me that their policy is actually so in-depth and robust that there is no room for interpretation. It's basically a step-by-step manual of how to investigate cases. So, you know, when you have a shorter policy, some schools have maybe 4 or 5 page non-discrimination or sexual violence policies. That's a lot of room for interpretation. There isn't a real clear-cut guidelines on how to deal with anything. So I think this decreases the margin of error. But they also are, their Title IX office is the most well-staffed in the Big 12 right now. They actually have 3 investigators, several sexual assault counselors, victim advocates, an office manager. It's really large for a campus of 17,000 students. So
that's fascinating. Is it scalable? I mean, to me, that's the big question, right? Is we're sitting here in Tucson, Arizona, right? Is what Baylor did and has done, is that something that a public institution can do? Is that something that even a smaller private institution can do? I mean, it took basically the biggest scandal in school history and a pile of money for them to be able to institute this new Title IX policy and hire all the best people. Is that something your typical university can do? And if not, what can they take away from it?
I mean, there certainly would be roadblocks that a public university would have that Baylor doesn't. You know, Baylor doesn't have to get money approved in the same way that we would. However, they do have to fundraise for things like this. So by spending $4.3 million on Title IX, they had to raise that money again. It didn't just come from a state pool. You know, everyone at Baylor was very hesitant to say other schools can and should do this. They always hedged it with they should do what's appropriate for them. But I mean, some of the things that I saw on campus, there's no reason every school can't be doing. There's no reason every school can't have posters in the bathrooms reminding them about their resources. There's no reason every school can't have their student counseling center offering training and that right. type of thing.
And it's something as simple as, I mean, on Baylor's Title IX website, there's a big button on the right-hand side of the screen that says, here's how you report.
Yeah.
Click here to report. And if you look at other universities, and it's not just the U of A, which obviously we cover and we're the most familiar with, but, I mean, there are a lot of universities that just don't make it that easy to report. And to me, there's a forthrightness and a transparency with Baylor that I frankly wasn't expecting, given everything that they've been through and given frankly all the negative media coverage that Baylor's been going through the last 4 or 5 years.
Right, and they're still living it. Every time something happens on campus, the scandal comes back up again.
Sure.
And nobody in that administration is by any means trying to push these things under a rug or make anybody forget that this happened. But, mm-hmm. I mean, their present is very different than their past, and I think that their future is still going to look different. But I think that the one thing that they've done that every school can do without an excuse is have these difficult conversations with your students. I mean, these are tough things to talk about. Everyone knows that, but there's no reason not to do it. And Dawn had talked about that when I visited.
You know, Mac and I both have teenagers. We both have kids that are in college. And so you understand the need to have those really difficult conversations, those real conversations about the truth of how you need to treat people and what are the repercussions if you don't do it the right way. And that's what I've appreciated in my short time here is we're very direct. We have real conversations, and we have the people in the room that are the experts to be able to talk through it.
It's fascinating stuff. Caitlin, you were there a couple of days and obviously met with all the important people. I guess this is kind of a two-part question. Number one, is there a way to acknowledge what has happened in the past and still move forward? I mean, to me, they're trying to thread this needle where they go, we're going to acknowledge it, but we're going to focus on all this other stuff.
I mean, they were really clear. When I spoke with President Livingstone, she was very clear that this is something we never will forget, and we're going to embrace it. This happened to us, but ultimately, we're better off because of it. Mm-hmm. That administration at the time just did not recognize sexual misconduct as a serious problem, which, mm-hmm. you know, in this day and age is kind of unfathomable. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it is, and they know it's happening. They're putting out news reports on their website every time there's a Title IX report made now. They're being really transparent. So, I mean, I think there is a way to do it where, you know, you embrace what's happened and what's come of it. But I don't get the impression they're trying to necessarily cast it aside.
Sure, sure. What do you think is the next step for them as this continues to evolve?
I mean, I think it's like they said, it's just that constant evaluation. So we know that, you know, in the fall, they'll bring in a whole new pack of students. I think the training will be different than last year. They've been sending out campus climate surveys to really gauge the response. So I think it's just going to be expanding on the existing programs that they have. And I'm hopeful that they're out there sharing what they've learned with other schools in different spaces.
When you told me that maybe the school that's on the leading edge now for Title IX reform was Baylor University, I mean, you saw my face.
I did.
Mean, it's so surprising. And so I think sort of affirming and it's incredible. I think that Baylor has now become one of the universities that seems to get it. And it's unfortunate that it took this massive scandal, but it's also pretty, I think, impressive that they do get it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. They're getting more reports. Students are wanting to talk about it, whereas when this big scandal took over, a lot of these reports were late reports because right. students didn't feel comfortable sharing. So
right. Fantastic. Caitlin Schmidt is the author of and did all the reporting behind the Star's Tidal Wave series about Title IX, sexual assault, and what we're doing to prevent it on college campuses. Caitlin, join us for our next episode where we will talk about what the University of Oregon is doing. They're sort of on par with the U of A in terms of, you know, it's a Pac-12 school, similar school size. They've done some really intriguing things. And then in episode 4, we'll talk about what the University of Utah continues to do under somewhat different circumstances than the rest of these. Thank you so much for listening to the Tidal Wave podcast, and stay tuned for episode 3.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.